This podcast is going to be important for any horse owner. If you can share this information with your friends and family, it can help not only save a horse's life, but even a person's life. Because today we're going to talk about emergency management planning that is pertinent to any of us all around the world dealing with natural disasters and other unplanned events that can impact our horses and, most importantly, impact you. So today we're going to share some very critical information that you need to consider to develop a plan. So I urge you to please listen to this podcast in its entirety, take notes, and take action. A little less than 20 years ago, in August 2005, many of us that lived in the United States, and probably some of you around the world, watched in horror as a Category 5 hurricane churned in the Gulf of Mexico and struck the United States near New Orleans in the state of Louisiana. Hurricane Katrina caused much devastation, loss of not only human life, but also many horses. Those images sank deep into our hearts and our consciousness. But what many others probably forgot or don't remember is just a few weeks later, another major Category 5 hurricane churned up in the Gulf of Mexico. And everybody held their collective breath, thinking Louisiana or New Orleans might get hit again. But I sat a state over in Texas and realized we might get hit by this massive storm. As the days unfolded, the track of Hurricane Rita showed that it was going near Houston, Texas. And then I was just a couple hundred miles inland in College Station. We began to scramble to figure out how we were going to protect our nearly 200 horses spread out across two facilities. The bottom line was we weren't prepared. We debated graduate students, faculty, staff on where we were going to put our horses, how we were going to protect them against damaging winds, potential flooding, and all the other things that we witnessed in New Orleans. We ultimately decided to put some horses under the arena, but we didn't have enough portable water containers. I actually brought my clothes hamper in to serve as an emergency water source for our horses. And we all came together at the last minute to protect our animals. Additionally, we had many horse owners calling us, pleading with us to see if we had room for their horses as they were evacuating the coastal regions of South Texas. This taught me early on in my career that emergency management planning needs to be thought through well before disaster strikes. And I made it one of the tenets of my career to educate as many people around the world as possible on the importance and why they need to develop an emergency management plan.
And Secretary is being led. He is number
the horse.
And the horses are the best thing in the world, isn't it? So I suppose I've always loved them, really, ever since I was a little girl.
Everybody's in line, and they're off. Secretary to wave very well, has good position.
The love.
Oh, I never thought owning a horse could mean so much to me.
Secretary not taking the lead.
The madness.
What kind of a horse is that? I've never seen a horse like that before.
Lightning now. He is moving like a tremendous machine.
Their story.
Mustang is more involved in the early development of this breed than I thought they were, but they were.
Secretary has opened a 22-length lead.
Welcome to Mad About Horses.
Hello, I'm Dr. Chris Mortensen. I'm an equine educator and scientist. I've been teaching and talking and researching horses for over two decades. And emergency management planning, this is so critical for any of you. It does not matter where you live in the world. You need to listen to this podcast and you need to develop an emergency management plan if you don't have one. If you have one, some of these tips in this podcast may help you adjust your plan so when a disaster strikes, you are prepared and ready. I mean, we're going to talk about from hurricanes to cyclones to typhoons. They are all similar tropical storms, just depends on where you live in the world and what you call them. We're going to talk about wildfires, tornadoes, things like tsunamis. I mean, think about what happened in Japan in 2011. Are you ready for something like that? Flooding, we are seeing increasing across the world. But how about hail, other storms, heavy snowstorms or blizzards? All of these things, depending on where you live, you need to consider to how you can protect your animals, your property, and then most importantly, you. But ultimately, when you develop a plan and you're ready for it, it's going to help save you a lot of grief and potentially save your horse's life and maybe even your own life in not putting yourself in danger. So that is why I'm so passionate about this topic. And honestly, I brought it forward after last week's podcast discussing horse transportation and why I said it was so critical that horses were taught and trained on how to properly load a horse trailer for situations like this if you need to evacuate with them. And then also if there's a medical emergency and you need to get that horse on a trailer quickly, quietly, safely, so they can be treated, which might end up saving their life. When we think of natural disasters, and when we start to think about an emergency management plan, we have to start thinking about what type of disaster are you possibly going to be faced with. Some, you're going to have warning. I lived in the state of Florida for nearly 10 years. We saw hurricanes churning up in the Atlantic Ocean, in the Gulf of Mexico. We had many days warning that this storm might potentially hit where we lived. So we were able to take action at the University of Florida and other horse owners in the state to protect our animals. But in other instances, sometimes you have little to no warning, or in the case of, say, earthquakes, you have no warning whatsoever. And you have to go and respond to what happens after a disaster. So again, we'll address that today. Another story that hit me hard was back home in my home state of California, where I grew up and where I worked and early in my career in San Diego, a little over 15 years ago, there were some horrific wildfires. And again, this was earlier in my career and I watched this unfold. And it taught me some valuable lessons on what to tell people, how to respond. And what happened here was, I remember my brother calling me, and I was on the East Coast of the United States, and he was in San Diego, and telling me that there was some wildfires nearby, but he was safe. Now, in Southern California, we get these things called Santa Ana winds that blow off the hot desert and blow out to the Pacific Ocean. I've likened it to putting a blow dryer to your face. That is what those winds feel like. They are very dangerous, especially when it comes to fire season, and it is often why you see really horrific wildfires in California. But as I went to bed, and then my brother went to bed, I didn't know it, but in the middle of the night, his phone went off with an evacuation order, and he had to leave his home. The fires that were in the east part of San Diego County had raced through many canyons and over many hills, and had spread so rapidly that he had to just run out of the house with his partner and their dog. Watching this unfold, many horse owners in San Diego had made the news because of the tragedy that was unfolding. People had little to no warning on how to evacuate or get their horses out. And this also made me think of the horrific wildfires that happened in Australia just a few years ago. And there's wildfires happening all the time all around the world. What really shook me about this story was the evacuation center for all these horses in San Diego was the Del Mar Horse Park and racetrack. And as these fires spread so quickly, they got near this evacuation center, but thankfully the firefighters stopped it at least a mile away. And I don't think the horses were in danger, but it showed how catastrophic these fires were, how quickly they spread, and how many horses' lives were endangered, and horses lost their lives in that fire. We don't have an exact count, but we do know many horses died. It was a very tragic story, and it is something I tell you so you can be prepared in case of a approaching wildfire. What do you do? How do you react? And that is why it is so important to have a plan. So let's do a little thought experiment. Really think about this. Think about you get a call suddenly as you're listening to this podcast, whether it's your home or your horse facility, and they tell you you have to evacuate your horse right now. There is an approaching natural disaster that you have to get your horses out right this second. Move quickly. How do you feel? Think about it. What's your anxiety level? What's your heart rate? Do you have a plan? And if you do have a plan, how do you feel? What are you thinking right now? Okay, if I have a plan, I'm going through my checklist right in my head. Boom, 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 boom. But if I don't have a plan, I'm immediately going, what do I do? Oh no, who do I call? Where do I go? So that is why it is so important, because if you have a plan, sure, you're going to be a little anxious. I'm sure your heart rate's going to go up a little bit, but at least you can start going through that checklist and you can take action. Whereas if you don't have a plan, you have a million things going through your head at that second going, oh no, what do I do? Where do I go? Who do I call? How am I going to get my horses to point A to point B? What do I need to bring with me? All of that is running through your head. So in developing your emergency management plans, the first thing you need to think about is identify the risk. You have to do a risk assessment for wherever you live in the world, because it's going to be different if, let's say, I live in Victoria, Australia, where these horrific wildfires were really bad a few years ago, or in the state of California, which I just talked about the fires, or earthquakes, or the state of Florida in the United States where hurricanes, or if I'm living in Europe, we routinely see in the news these horrific, big, massive storms hitting Europe, or even horrific blizzards and snowstorms, to living in Asia where you have cyclones and typhoons. So it depends on where you live. You have to start identifying the different types of risk before you can really come up with a solid emergency management plan. So when you think of these risks, think of them in two ways. Depending on the type of disaster, do I have time to evacuate? So that's usually 24 hours or more warning. Or do I have very little time, which is a few hours? And then even think about, okay, a disaster hits and I had no warning. What am I going to do after? And we'll talk about that towards the end of this podcast. But the type of disaster or natural event is going to dictate how much time you have to react. So I'm going to give you some types of natural disasters for you to think about. I've already talked about a few of them, but If we look at last year, some of the big events that happened that affected millions, if not billions of people around the planet, we had Cyclone Mocha that was in Southeast Asia. We had Storm Daniel that wreaked havoc across Europe, impacted horses everywhere. We had Tropical Cyclone Freddy. There was obviously multiple hurricanes being tracked towards the United States and Mexico, Central America, parts of the Caribbean, and then also in the Pacific Ocean, many tropical storms. Then you had wildfires. We had horrific wildfires in Hawaii, Maui, Lahaina. Most of it burnt down. You had wildfires in North Africa, wildfires in Greece, had wildfires again in California. Then you had floods. So you had flooding in Chile, flooding in Africa, flooding in Brazil. And then California, again, got hit with floods. My poor home state where I grew up. Then you had things that had no warning, and there was a really horrific earthquake in Turkey this past year. And California is always shaking. Other parts of the Pacific Ocean, Japan, other parts of the world where these disasters can strike, and even, I dare say, volcanoes in some parts of the world erupting. So you have to identify, okay, where I live, these are the type of events that could be a risk to my horse. Then when you start breaking it down, okay, I have time or don't have time. So typically tropical storms, we have a lot of time. We track them by satellites. You can watch your local news, websites, wherever you get your information, even your local, state, regional, national emergency organizations will be putting out information. But we typically have warning when those are approaching. Severe storms or things like tornadoes, again, you have some warning. Sometimes those can strike out of the blue, and I'll talk about another story where that happened to me. But, you know, if there's some bad weather coming, you can take some action. That is where your emergency plan can be activated. Wildfires, you'll know the season, you'll know the weather. Sometimes you have warning. The story in California, San Diego, some people had some warning. They just didn't know how quickly those fires would move. But sometimes you have warning with them, sometimes you don't. But identify those. And then those ones with limited warning, again, fires can be really quickly. Severe weather can brew up very fast. Earthquakes, you have no warning. And the whole purpose is, okay, if this happens, I'm going to do this. If this type of event happens, I'm going to do that. And really start thinking about it. Now, the next step is to first write this down. Never, ever, ever, ever put yourself in danger. That is so important to remember. I know we love these animals. We love our horses, but if you get hurt or anything bad happens to you, you can't help your horse. Always put your life first. I know that is hard for some of us, but you have to drill that into your head. Sometimes we don't think during these disasters. So I always told students and people, put at the top in bold, do not put myself in danger. As a reminder to think. Because again, if your horse is hurt and you're hurt too, you can't help them. Okay? So please, I urge you to do that. Now, the next decision, once you identify the risks, is will I evacuate with my horses or not? And if you are going to evacuate, you have to think when, where, and how. So if you're going to evacuate, that's going to be based on your own risk assessment, and you have to think through it. Can I safely trailer my horses out of the danger area, or would it be safer to leave my horses at home in the pasture or the barn? I'm going to address that one in a minute because that's a very difficult question to answer. So you have to ask yourself that. Then if you are going to evacuate, okay, when? We'll talk about that. Where? That is the big one. Where am I going to take my horse? this is again why your emergency management plan is so critical, because you have to identify where I'm going to take my horse. Now, your regional, national, wherever you live, agencies should have collection points or places where you can take horses in an emergency. Because this is happening all over the world, we have woken up in the last few decades to emergency management planning. A lot of agencies around the world have woken up. And when I go and search different countries and different regions, there are tips and places where to go during an emergency. So let me give you an example of where to go. After I graduated with my PhD, when I landed at Clemson University, and again, I was the state equine specialist, I made it, again, one of my top objectives was to ensure there was a solid equine evacuation emergency management plan for the state of South Carolina. I worked with the government agencies to educate horse owners and help develop a plan. It was actually really timely because they too were starting to work on one, because again, we were waking up to, wow, we weren't prepared for a Katrina or a Rita or some of these other storms. So South Carolina has developed a really robust evacuation plan, and so has many other parts of the United States, and then elsewhere in the world, Australia, New Zealand, Europe, those agencies have developed really robust plans. But for example, in South Carolina, if you have a horse down on the coastal region and there's a hurricane approaching, there are facilities within the state that we call it upstate or more inland that could take your horse. There are farms that can take up to 60 horses. And you go to the South Carolina website, they identify those farms, there's phone numbers, people to contact, and what specifics are for that facility. So for example, this one says the owner provides feed, hay, and bedding. Owner's responsible for keeping stalls clean, no motorhome hookup, stuff like that. There's also other facilities identified outside the state of South Carolina that you can take horses in North Carolina, Georgia. I know when I was in Florida, there were places to go to take horses outside the state as well. So everybody coming together to help horse owners. So you just need to have an idea. Okay, there are places to go. Here's where I can go and take my horse. Now, the other thing you want to do is call ahead if you're going to evacuate. Again, this is if you have a lot of time. If you don't have time, like a quickly approaching wildfire, my advice would be, if you're evacuating, get your stuff, get your horse, get out, then worry about calling ahead to say, hey, do you have space? Get out of the danger area. That's the most immediate, obviously. Use common sense. But when you're evacuating or right before you evacuate, if you have time, call ahead because you want to make a reservation. It's like a hotel reservation. Call the facility. Do you have room? I have this many horses. This is how many stalls I need. Or do you have paddocks? Anything. Give them as much information as possible, and then they will let you know if they can take you or not. If they can't, then you call the next one and the next one until you find somewhere. If you can't find anything, I would call your emergency regional officials. Say, hey, I have X amount of horses. I have nowhere to go. What do you advise? And they will tell you where to go. Now, in saying that, make sure you have hay, feed, water for the trip ready to go in the case of an emergency. So again, this takes some planning. This is why this is important. Okay, walk through your facility, where your horses are. I need to evacuate with my two horses. Okay, where is the emergency hay that I need to bring? Okay, I have my hay barn. There's plenty, at least I would say 2 weeks worth of hay I can grab and put on the trailer with the horse. If I'm feeding them anything supplemental, I make sure I have enough for a couple weeks. Then I need something for traveling for water. And I'll talk about why that's important in a minute, but obviously you need water for them while they're being transported. And again, the general advice is for about 2 weeks. You don't know, like in certain hurricanes or certain disasters, it might take a few days or it might take longer for you to get back to your property. The next big advice is if you're evacuating is know your route. Know which way you're going to drive and have a backup route in case that one is either full of traffic or it's in the danger zone. When I was watching Hurricane Rita unfold, I remember watching the news. The roads out of Houston, Texas were jam-packed, bumper to bumper. Again, the state wasn't really prepared for that back in 2005. People were stuck. People with horse trailers were stuck in hours and hours of traffic. So that is why it's important to bring water in case you get stuck in a situation like that where you have to give some to your horse. Remember, tropical storms are usually the weather's hot, humid, and those horses are going to be heat stressed in the back of a trailer. You want to make sure you can support them until you get to where you're going. So again, know your route, but have that backup in mind in case, you know, like wildfires or something like that, and you can't go down that highway or wherever you're driving. Now, when is the big one? When do I evacuate? Generally, for tropical storms, or you have enough warning, 48 hours-ish. Again, that's because you want to avoid the high winds, any debris, and traffic, because people wait to the last minute to evacuate. And I've seen it hurricane after hurricane after hurricane from my own experience in the United States, where people waited too long and then they jammed up the highways. Now, I understand this can be very frustrating for you or anybody that has to evacuate with their horses. Another story. When I was in Florida, there was a Category 5 hurricane, Hurricane Matthew, bearing down on us. I always said, if there was a Category 4 or 5, I'm out of there. I'm getting in my car with my kids and my animals, and we're gone. We evacuated to Alabama to get out of the way of this storm. And I was in the middle of the state, Gainesville, Florida. So we weren't from a coastal region, but still, these storms can do a lot of damage. Hurricane Matthew, the last minute, took a right-hand turn and just went up the east coast of Florida and then back out to sea. It didn't strike our region, and there was little to no damage in Gainesville, Florida. I understand that can be frustrating, and I understand it feels like it was a waste to evacuate, but it's better to be safe than sorry. And if we had not left, that storm could have been catastrophic and could have endangered not only my life, my family's life, but my animals' lives. So again, that's something you have to answer for yourself. But the advice across the world is if you can evacuate sooner rather than later, do it. The next part of this equation is if you're evacuating, is your horse prepared? And I talked about the critical importance of horses being able to load into that trailer. I cannot tell you how important that is. And if we go back and put ourselves in the shoes or the boots of those horse owners in California with wildfires brewing up, hot air blowing, the fires racing over these hills and through these valleys towards your horse operation, smoke's in the air, you are scared, nervous, anxious, and you go to get a horse that sees and smells and hears. They have an idea, this isn't okay, this is not normal. So they are probably fearful, anxious, high anxiety, and you go get them and they can read you. So hopefully you're doing this as calmly as possible. But you go to halter them. Hopefully you can catch them easily because they're used to that. And hopefully you can lead them onto a trailer, because if they are not used to getting on a trailer and a horse refuses to get on a trailer, there's not anything you can do that's going to get that horse on there. If they do not know how to properly load safely and trust you, and then you put it in a wildfire situation or you don't have a lot of time, good luck getting that horse on a trailer. So that's why it's so important to teach them how to trailer load. And again, spread this information, talk to your friends, because some people go, when that day comes, I'll just get them on. Well, no, I've spent hours trying to get a mare on a trailer that didn't want to get on. We tried everything and we just had to wait. It took a few hours to where everything was calm. And then finally we were able to walk her on, and we had just sold her and the owner was there, but they understood this mare was just not well trailer trained. She was young. So again, make sure your horses can load. And then do they have things like their vaccinations? Because you're going to need that. One of the big things in the United States was a Coggins test. Horses have to show negative on that. That's for equine infectious anemia. But some places may need flu shots or other things so you're not spreading disease to other horses. And again, there were a couple facilities. It was kind of a hush-hush back when I was living in South Carolina that could take horses that didn't have a Coggins test, because we knew sometimes owners just didn't know they needed it. And those facilities were willing to take a risk. They had some isolation pens that they could put those types of horses away. But all in all, almost every single one required at least that. So again, it depends on where you live and what they're requiring of you. Okay, so that's evacuating. And that takes a lot of thought. And the next step is, what if you can't evacuate? Whether you don't have access to a trailer or something that can pull a trailer, or you don't have a lot of time and you just have to do some things to help your horses hopefully survive this storm or whatever's approaching. Or it's some of this is if you're reacting afterwards, which is going to bleed into some of this, meaning you have a horrific earthquake and you need to go inspect your facility and your animals to make sure they're okay. But let's just say in an event of, say, an approaching tropical storm, you can't evacuate with your animals. What are some things you can do to protect them and then also your property? One thing has always been advised is if you can modify your fences or your pastures to where the horses can move to higher ground in the event of any flooding, or lower ground with higher winds, if that's available to you. Again, it depends on where you live. A lot of areas, it's just flat. But you know, give your horses choice of where they can move to withstand some of these weather events. The next big question, and there is no right answer, and this one has been frustrating me for decades. Do I leave my horse in a barn, or do I leave him out in a paddock or a pasture? If your property has strong fencing, it may be safer for them to be out on pasture or out on paddocks. But if it's an electrical storm or thunderstorm, you have to worry about horses getting struck by lightning, which does happen. If there's floods, it may be better for them to be outside rather than stuck in a barn where they might drown. So again, this is going to come down to your own individual situation. Then what type of barn is it or facility? You know, well-constructed pole barns, concrete structures may be better to prevent horses getting hurt from flying debris, but they can collapse. Roofs do get torn off in really bad storms. Then you have to look around the property and see if there's any trees or power lines near the barn, because if those fell, could those hurt your horses? Could they spark a fire? I've asked many other educators and scientists and equine specialists, and I always said, what do you do? We had kind of these long discussions, like, it's really going to depend on your individual situation. I can't tell you, put them in the barn, or I can't tell you, put them out in pasture. That is a question you're going to have to answer for yourself. But keep some of that in your mind when you are not evacuating with your horses, but you're trying to help them survive whatever's coming. Another thing is, do not ever stay in the barn with your horses during these storms. Again, when I was at Clemson, it seems like a lot of stuff happened in the East Coast of the United States. But we had just got done ultrasounding some mares for a research project we were conducting. And I had two mares in stocks, got done, got cleaned up, and my graduate student and the barn manager were about to take the mares out, and I was done, so I was going to run home at the end of the day. I had not left the barn more than 5 minutes when a tornado formed right over the facility there at Clemson University and then actually landed on campus. It was a small tornado, caused some damage. Nobody was hurt. And it made me think, what would happen if I was in the barn with two mares in stocks and we're getting hit with a tornado out of nowhere? How would I react? The point is, we would have just had to hunker down and pray and hopefully survive if it hit us. You do not want to be in that situation. You do not want to be in a facility that could collapse and injure you, or the worst, even kill you. One thing I will add, this was a couple decades ago. Today, we do have apps, emergency alert apps. Our phones are really good at disaster alerts. There is weather apps you can get that will alert you to bad weather. So you could have more warning. I didn't know we were under tornado watch. It had just been a normal day at work. We were out working our horses most of the afternoon. I didn't realize this storm brewed up and there was potential tornadoes, because I would have let the mares out in the pasture and told my students to get out of there, go find somewhere safe to be. So I learned from that. But today we do have technologies that help, and use them. Okay, then other things you want to think about, okay, other than our horses, how do we protect our property? One thing if you can do is turn off the power to the barn to avoid any sparks, barn fires, things like that. You can, for fires, these are some things to think about. You can remove all fire fuels such as, you know, excess grass, sticks, leaf litter for at least 30 meters or 100 feet away from your facilities. You definitely store your hay, straw, shavings, wood, fuel supplies, anything that may burn away from your stalls and where your horses are kept, because that is critical to prevent or limit barn fires. Clean your roofs and your gutters regularly, because leaves can build up in there. Again, that's fuel for a fire, especially going back to some of these bad wildfires. You have sparks in the air going far, and that's how they spread quickly. So you have to look at your facility and go, okay, how do I limit the amount of fire that could impact my facility? Talk about fire-resistant plants on your property. You can even work with your local like fire department or fire brigade. Talk about building fire breaks around your facility. You want to make sure, you know, your facility is as fireproof as possible. Then also look at storing enough feed, again, up off the ground in a dry area for at least 2 weeks. If your hay gets wet during a storm, throw it away. We never want to feed moldy hay to a horse, and especially in tropical storms, it's warm, it's humid and wet, and that will grow mycotoxins and other things that could end up killing your horse or cause really bad digestive upset. So we never feed a horse moldy hay or wet hay that's been exposed to the environment. Water, think about this. We take it for advantage that we turn on our faucets and clean water comes out. In disasters like floods and some of these others, sometimes the water gets contaminated, or you lose your water supply, pipes break, earthquakes, things like that. So you want to make sure you have water stored safely. So things like trash cans, have an emergency water source always available for your horses. Have a first aid kit. Things that you want in there is wraps and things like scissors or other things that you don't think about. Have backup halters and lead ropes, but have that first aid kit ready. You also want to make sure you have things like flashlights with extra batteries. a chainsaw and fuel if you can, emergency fencing, because sometimes, a lot of times, fences will come down or a tree will fall on the fence. So you have to think about that. Okay, how do I make sure my fences are okay? All of this, power source, power typically goes out with a lot of these disasters. Can you get a generator and do you have fuel? Again, stored away from your horses, but in case you need power at your facility. Think about that. Think about what you're going to need after disaster hits so you can still keep your horses safe and going, your operation going. Next big consideration with all of this is identification. And let me tell you why. Now, this was 30 years ago, but in the 90s, Hurricane Andrew hit Florida. It was a horrific hurricane. 80% of the horses they found that had escaped or were off their property did not have any type of identification on them. And they had a horrific time trying to reunite their animals with their owners. So in thinking of this, the horses need identification on them. And then you need proof of ownership. So how are you going to do that? Well, we do know there are ways to permanently ID a horse. Things like freeze brands, lip tattoos with our racing horses, microchips with technology today is an excellent way to identify your animal. So there's permanent ways that you should be able to identify your animal. Also take photographs, keep them on your phone, print them off if you need them to carry with you. Okay, and make sure you're in the picture. Family's in the picture, friends are in the picture. So it's not just a random picture of a horse, but it's you with your horse. That helps you reunite with them. But then temporary ID, it's very important for horses to have on this. Now, another story. In those wildfires of California, I remember seeing this in the newspaper where horse owners were spray painting their phone numbers on the side of the horse. They were responding quickly. They didn't have time. Fires were rolling towards them. They couldn't get their horses out. They spray painted the horses in hopes the horses would survive the fires and then be reunited with them. And I will say horses are really smart, intelligent creatures. They can find ways outside of some of these disasters. But I did have an older horse owner come up to me and sweet old lady. She was really sweet. She said, that was a wonderful presentation, but I really disagree with you on spray painting horses. It could harm them because the skin is an organ. The skin can absorb toxins. I said, I understand. I'll always let people know that may not be the best, but I don't have any research to say it is harmful or not harmful. It was one way horse owners used to mark their horses so they could reunite with them. Other ways you can do, and this one I've always thought was brilliant, was getting a luggage tag that are waterproof with their name and phone number in it and weaving it in the horse's mane and tail. I would put one in each. Do you leave a halter on? I would say the synthetic halters, I wouldn't, especially in wildfires, like the Australian emergency management advise against putting those on horses because they can melt and the metal rings get really hot and can burn the horses. I was always concerned with synthetic halters that horses can get their head stuck on debris and drown or get stuck and really hurt themselves. So I said, if you were going to use a halter, use a leather halter, and then you can attach something to it with your identification on it. I see neck collars advised, but I wouldn't, again, if that gets stuck on debris, but things like leg bands, some even advise using clippers to shave in a phone number or permanent marker on the hooves, but as many ways as you can to identify that horse. So if they get loose, they can be reunited with you or somebody can see them and call you and say, hey, I have your horse here. And then you could be reunited with them. Then again, for you, those pictures are important, but having a waterproof bag, your registration papers, vaccination records, Coggins test if you need it, the microchip information if you have it, anything that's important with that horse, you have it in a bag that you can grab, things like your veterinarian's phone number, other points of contact, other family members. So you have that in a disaster and it can help you. And again, to reunite with your horse. Okay, so that is all the prep, evacuate, don't evacuate, prepare your property. Now let's talk about after. After the disaster hits, it can be, I evacuated with my horses and I pulled them hundreds of miles or hundreds of kilometers away. We're coming back to our property, or an earthquake hit and I need to go out and check my facility and check on my animals. Again, do not put yourself in harm's way, period. End of story. Be very, very careful. Downed power lines can electrocute you and your horses. Unsafe structures. I've been through some earthquakes in California. Very scary. And seeing bridges collapse and buildings collapse. Just be very, very careful. Okay, again, if you get hurt or you, gosh, touch wood, die, you can't help your horse, okay? That is why I get so passionate about this. If your horses were left behind, again, be very careful, but first thing you should do, besides ensuring your safety, is get eyes on that horse. Try to look at all your animals and see if they're accounted for. Then be very cautious around them, because if they're hurt or they're still stressed from an event, they might be unsafe. So again, use caution, but look for any injuries. And if they're superficial, you know, if you can treat them, also realize your veterinarians are going to be probably overwhelmed. So if it's in a dire emergency, call them right away. And I would also have this discussion with your vet before a disaster hits. Hey, where are you going to be in a disaster? What should I do? And get their advice. And then you can start the cleanup, clearing debris away from the barn if everything's okay and safe. Again, in areas with floods, watch out for snakes and other creatures that might have crept into those barns and hay and trying to escape any flooding that might have happened. Always check your fences, your fence line, make sure they're up and sturdy still, because you don't want to put horses out in pastures or paddocks where they can escape. Again, get rid of all that wet hay or bad feed that might have gotten wet. Now, if you come back and your horse was left behind and they're gone, you want to contact your emergency officials immediately. Let them know how many horses, what they look like, when you last saw them, and that they are gone. Then, depending on the type of the disaster, they'll give you advice if you can start looking for them. But again, don't put yourself in harm's way. But they'll be able to guide you in trying to find your horses. So just to summarize all of this, building your plan, again, at the top, do not put yourself in harm. But the first thing you want to do is identify those threats to your area, wherever you live. Have an idea of what you might potentially face, and then that will dictate how you're going to respond to it. Then you have to decide, will you evacuate or not with your horses? If you're evacuating with them, when, where, and how? Keep that in mind. Okay, answer those questions. And then if you're not evacuating with them, what can you do to protect your horses so you give them the best chance of surviving whatever is coming? Then also protect your property and have supplies on hand for after disaster hits so you can, again, take care of your horses and your property. So what supplies and paperwork will you need is the next one. Does your horse have identification? Make sure they have it. And then you have proof of ownership. Then after the disaster, obviously check your horses, check your property, but be very, very cautious. Finally, share your plans with friends, family, your facility, your veterinarian, whoever you know. Let them know, in the event of X, this is what I'm going to do. Or if this happens, this is what I'm going to do. So they can either help, or at least they know what's going on with your horses and what to do. I mean, preparation is so critical, and it will really help you get through disasters, you know, reduce your anxiety and stress, which in turn is going to reduce your anxiety and stress of your horses, because again, they read us very, very well. So if you have a good solid plan in place and you execute it during some of these disasters or events, you're going to be less stressed. You're going to be less anxious, and you're going to help your horses, and you're going to help yourself. Final comment is, do your research, read up on this more, know what could impact you in your area, or what your agencies around you, wherever you live, what will they do? How can they help you? Because that knowledge and preparedness is going to go a long way in helping you and your horses. Welcome back. That is such a big topic for me. It's been on the list for the podcast, but it's one that I've always talked about. I've always stressed it to any horse owners I've interacted with, obviously with my students, and now you on this podcast. Please share it with somebody. Share your emergency management plans. Any other horse owners, just ask them, do you have an emergency management plan in place? What are you preparing for? Start that discussion, because you will thank me one day, and your horses are going to thank you, because if you're prepared, it gives them the best chance of surviving or recovering from a disaster. I mean, I've been through earthquakes, I've been through hurricanes, tornadoes, barn fires. Recovering horses from that has been horrific and tough, but I've done that. Any types of these events, and whenever they happen, I'm always looking at the news, you know, what's going on in the horse industry and for those horse owners, because when I see things like fires in Australia or blizzards in Europe that come out of nowhere, all the things that hit North America, South America, I always think about those horses and what those horse owners are doing. So thank you for helping us tell this story. If you haven't given a 5-star review on iTunes or Spotify, it will mean the world to me if you could do that. A few kind words really helps get this out in circulation. And again, go check out madbarn.com. Tons of resources on that Learn tab. Over 500 articles, transportation articles, health articles, on top of nutrition articles. And check us out on social media. We're there too. But thanks for listening, and stay tuned for next week. Another great topic coming your way. Take care.